Welcome to this concurrent session, and we're going to be discussing financial services, risk culture, and the effective professional. My name is Martin Mulkey. I'm chairing, you may be interested, I volunteered for this role because I'm interested especially in the last part, the effective professional. As a facilitator of the professionalism course, someone who was on the leadership committee, the actual role of the individual is something that I'm keen to hear our speaker expand upon. So let me introduce our speaker. The introduction of CPS 220 in 2015 into the APRA regulated entities saw a much stronger focus by boards on risk culture. Yet, an October 2016 APRA update on the topic commented that most institutions still seem to be grappling with how to get risk culture embedded into the actions and behaviours of the people who work in these businesses. Indeed, the community is increasingly demanding a renaissance of the financial services professional to address their concerns around industry conduct. Drawing on over 20 years of financial services experience, Tim Gorst is going to explore the characteristics of people who are effective at managing risk and how an effective risk management strategy will be built around people, their development into more effective professionals, and creating an environment where they can thrive. Please welcome Tim Gorst.
Thank you for that introduction, Martin. And I think you have come to the right place to have your need or your interest met here. Look, I think we've heard lots of different talks on risk culture over the years, and certainly there's a lot being said about risk culture out in the industry. The perspective I'd like to bring today is one of someone who has worked in the trenches in a line one business capacity in a financial services business, and I've started to see that risk culture needs to be explained in a way that actually makes sense to the people who work in these organisations. So what I'm going to do today, I will spend a bit of time giving the context around why risk culture is so topical at the moment. I won't labour over that context because I think we all read the papers. I'm then going to go on to talk about a bunch of capabilities which I think are essential to the intuitive and incisive risk management skills that we need employees of the of the financial services profession to have. So these are a bunch of capabilities which are anchored in my own experience, but also what I've gleaned from different papers that have been written on this topic over the years. It's a framework that I'd like all of you to take away and reflect on, because I think we all need to rise to the challenge of getting more and more people in the financial services profession effective and professional at what they do. I'm then going to reflect on what can organisations actually do to instil a stronger risk culture. The think differently part of today's presentation is it's all anchored around making things meaningful to people. I think there's so much that's been said now, particularly through CPS 220, around frameworks and what the board needs to do. And I think a lot of boards are getting it. The real fertile ground for me is having this stuff make sense to people and cutting through with people who work in these professions. And then finally, I'll wrap up with some conclusions. So go for about half an hour, then we'll have some questions after that. So let's start. Risk culture, in its simplest form, is about people and how they apply themselves to the management of risk. I got asked the other day from a bunch of ANU students in five seconds, how would you sum up what risk culture is? And I like to think of risk culture as being about people. Another thing I do on my side is I try to teach Actuarial Institute students about ERM through the ERM workshop. And one of the things I try to get them to understand is that risk culture is not in conflict with organisational culture. You know, every organisation has its espoused values and the values and culture the CEO is trying to run from the top down Risk culture should never be framed as something which is different or distinct. You know, risk culture is about how those organisational values get applied to the management of risk and always needs to be congruent. But ultimately, when people say, what's your ultimate test point on risk culture? For me, it's about developing people at all levels into professionals who are effective in the management of risk. And I think a lot of us have seen the APRA insights around tone from the top and starts with the board, and I concur with that. But at the end of the day, the board members are just people, like all the other people in the organisation, who have to be effective at risk management. One of the great questions I think we have as an indicator of risk management is, do you understand the risks that you're managing, when we talk to people all the way through the organisation? And when you start to get people say, well, yeah, I understand I'm accountable for these types of things that could go wrong, you know you're starting to make some headroads into risk culture. CPS 220, it does make it law now that APRA regulated financial services entities have a strategy. And we all know it doesn't actually define what that strategy should be, nor does it even define what risk culture is. It says to the boards, go away and work it out. And so based on my observations, I've thought through, well, what does success look like? And that's a really critical question for a lot of boards. You can't actually have a strategy to improve risk culture without some sort of vision around what it looks like at the end. And that's what I'd like to present today. And in fact, something I'm doing on the side at the moment is a little bit of pro bono work for a charity organisation here in Victoria who needs some help developing a risk management strategy. Sean McGinn was thrilled when he heard that, by the way. He's been promoting that idea for some time. But certainly one of the things that I'm working with them on is, at the end of the day, what does risk culture look like? It has to look like something. And you know, I'm sharing the same insights that I'm going to share with you today. So this is transferable not just for financial services, but for any organisation more broadly. So let's go into the context a little bit more. Look, we've all seen the headlines over on the right-hand side, and if we think about the whole post-GFC journey, what we, I think, started with was a need for the regulator to, first of all, let's just strengthen capital management and capital positions. And then we'll move on to other things later. And what were those other things? Well, I think after the strengthening of the capital positions, governance standards are already out by APRA. We had a real focus on risk management. And so we had SPS 220, CPS 220, risk management compliance from 2015. And within that, when we started to drill into what's important within a risk management framework, what started to really emerge, both from community expectations and thoughts from the regulator, was risk culture. If there's any part of your risk management framework you want to give some special attention to, risk culture probably deserves a real focus. Interestingly, you can even start to sort of drill into risk culture, and I know APRA's looking at incentives now as one of the key parts of that. But certainly improving risk culture is being held out as the final frontier in the post-crisis response. Look, I ascribe to that. It hasn't been a great few months for the financial services industry in terms of management of conduct risk. And I certainly think the root cause is the actions and behaviours of people. You know, from the board all the way down. So we are where we are. And let's actually start a conversation. So risk management strategy. By the way, again, when I advise any organisation on where risk management strategy should start, I always say it starts with the board, but needs to be built around people. I throw this up because it's just a bit of work that I've been thinking through lately, and the way I like to explain ERM to a bunch of students is, at the end of the day, all those elements of the risk management framework, why are they there? And I can come to no other conclusion than they're simply there to support the people whose responsibility is to manage risk. So fit for purpose on things like a risk appetite statement, board reporting, you know, event management, all these things that make up your risk management framework. Fit for purpose is they actually work for people. Okay, so I'd like to give this drawing to people to help them understand that at the end of the day, ERM is built around people, and central to a risk management framework are people and their ability to be effective professional at delivering the organisational mission. So this is important because I think what can happen is, as an organisation, you can spend a lot of money implementing a fantastic risk management framework, but if you're not investing in your people, the whole thing collapses. Okay, and that's a real lesson for businesses wanting to go down the journey of enterprise risk management. So effective professional people delivering on their organisational mission. Now I'm going to go through... So under CPS 220, Financial Services Board must outline the approach to instilling an appropriate risk culture across the institution. So therefore, if risk culture is about people, a board must start by describing the characteristics or capability of people in their organisation. The other thing I like is that when a board comes up with these concepts of what's important for people in managing risk, they then also need to be reflective enough to apply them to themselves. Now, when I talk about people, over the next few slides, I'm including the board members in that category. So here's my...
Not too far from the microphone. I know they'll be able to hear, but
okay.
For the recording purposes.
Sorry, I'm a roamer. Apologies about that. So here's my little framework. I'll go through this now. I'm going to go through four key capabilities. People know their business when they're effective professionals. People collaborate, which is work with others. People take accountability. And all these things are undertaken on a foundation piece of leadership with integrity. The caveat around leadership being integrity is really critical because it's quite possible to be fantastic at leadership without the integrity. So we need to talk about integrity. The context of leadership, I think there's a bit of head in the know the business. There's a lot of heart in the collaborate, and there's a lot of guts in the take accountability. So I'll explain what this means in the context of self-leadership a little bit later on. So we're going to go through these elements now. So before I do that, let's just reflect on why the characteristics improve risk management. When people don't know their business, events occur because context, experience or business knowledge is not factored into a decision. So knowledge is important. You also have a situation when people don't know their business, there's no creativity in the problem solving, and you'll have a situation where things go wrong. Collaboration is critical. Many risk events occur because the right people were not part of the decision-making process. Follows on from the previous point, you simply can't have a situation where one person knows everything about the business. By bringing in all those various perspectives, you get the different knowledge that you need to make a decision, and as I'll explain in a moment, you also get all the stakeholder voices at the table, which the latter is just as critical, which I'll explain in a moment. Take accountability. I think we've all learnt that the difference between a risk turning into an issue or a small issue turning into a very, very big issue is when there's a lack of clarity around whose responsibility it is to make a decision. Delays in financial services are just deadly. You know, when the difference between picking up a fraud early, picking up a unit pricing issue early, letting it run, is quite dramatic on the balance sheet. And finally, leadership with integrity. What I want to talk about is the fact that leadership is a concept, not just for executives and the board, it's a concept for everybody. And when you lack that leadership, you become one-dimensional in your risk management approach as an individual. You might be great at the knowledge bit, but really poor at collaboration, really poor at taking accountability. The development of financial services people into leaders is about operating across all those three leadership dimensions, which I call head, heart and guts, and I'll introduce that framework in a little bit. Of course, integrity is critical as well, and there's been plenty of events through a lack of integrity, so we need to address that. So that's a little bit around why these things that I'm about to go through are important. People who know their business. So let's go through it. Look back is the first capability. Backward looking, how critical is that to risk management? You know, cause there's the old adage of, you know, forget the past, let's look forward. No, it doesn't work like that in financial services. We need to learn from trends, we need to learn from cycles, and we need to learn from behaviours which actually don't change a great deal through history. people understand how events of the past have shaped where their organisation is at today. There's a real, in the actuarial profession, we're talking about big data, right? And at the end of the day, I think this is a backward looking risk management technique to understand using data the way things work and behave and what's the factors that actually explain how our business works. So we look back, but we also look forward as people effective at risk management. The look forward bit is where I think purpose, plan and values become important. And they are extremely important. They're espoused values for an organisation. They really anchor all of our stakeholders together and give us a basis on which to move forward. And certainly, in terms of looking forward, the key thing is that people actually have an eye for what are the things that could disrupt or impact on my organisation. One of the techniques we use for that is stress testing. I think that's a fantastic forward-looking risk management technique to get the whole business engaged around what are some of the things that could happen to our business and how would we respond. Business continuity planning is another fantastic technique. So we need to get people in the financial services industry looking back but also looking forward. And then finally, using that insight from their looking back and looking forward to start connecting the pieces. So there's an issue when financial services people don't understand how interacted things are within their business. And I think those interactions and the interconnectivity is the complexity is increasing there. And people need to connect those pieces and get confident to speak up when they see that something's not right. So that's knowing the business. A little framework that I've spent a bit of time developing to help people understand how all that comes together. The balancing act really, in terms of understanding your business, is understanding the interactions between risk, return and capital and how all those anchor around the customer-centric purpose. Just a couple of comments. I see a lot of events which can often be explained by mismanagement of stakeholders. The stakeholders that we've got in financial services are innumerable. The stakeholders actually contribute the capital that we need to run a financial services business, both financial and non-financial capital. And those stakeholders demand a return on that capital consistent with the risks that are taken. So if I sort of reflect on it, it's when a stakeholder that doesn't have their return expectations met that you start to see bad things happen in businesses. And, you know, some examples there, the shareholder, when their expectations aren't met, is usually a sale of your stock and an inability to raise capital, and that's going to have dire impacts on your share price and will pretty quickly raise itself as an event in your business. When you start to go to the community, I think this is one worthy of digging into a little deeper. The community is represented by your customers, but also represented by the regulator and other stakeholder groups. The community demands a return on their social capital that they give. They provide a license for you to run this profitable business, but they demand that trust to come back. And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years within the context of this framework is the community not satisfied with the return they're getting on the social capital that they give. And then that's where you start to see headlines around Royal Commissions, you start to see banking, you start to see those stakeholders pulling whatever lever they can to try to get a better return from their capital. So one of the key things around enterprise risk management and knowing your business is knowing your stakeholders, knowing what they've contributed into your business, the expectations that they want in terms of that capital they've contributed. And the customer-centric purpose is important. Why customer-centric purpose? Why not shareholder-centric purpose or regulator-centric purpose? At the end of the day, I think the thinking is pretty clear now. If you anchor your whole purpose around the customer, that is the stakeholder, or that's the purpose that will galvanise everyone together. It engages the regulator when you're a customer-centric organisation. It obviously engages your customers. It engages the shareholder because there's a pretty clear link between managing your customers and creating shareholder value. So the purpose is important. So this is a framework that sometimes I throw up to explain how things work in financial services. It's quite simple, but it's really about knowing your business is around getting your people in your organisations to have some sort of framework to make sense of what happens in their business. So let's keep moving on. Collaboration. Collaboration, as I said, is really important. Understanding you get better outcomes when you work with others around a common purpose than when you work alone. And I've already mentioned that brings the knowledge that leads to an effective decision being made. It also brings stakeholder representatives into the discussion to make sure that all the stakeholder interests are being acknowledged as well. Within the context of collaboration, welcoming review and challenge. Now, this is not just because it's law that there's an independent risk function that can actually be aligned to within a financial services business and offer that review and challenge. The broader business, the line one, has to learn to actually welcome that review and challenge and appreciate their risk function and understand that sometimes review and challenge does save you back. It leads to a better outcome. And so these are capabilities that can be taught. Right? All these things are capabilities that can be taught. Engaging with your stakeholders and collaboration starts with how you train your people. Likewise, welcoming review and challenge is a mindset that needs to be taught within financial services businesses. Moving on to taking accountability. There's three things here. Serving your customers and that focus that you need to put on a customer, it just needs to be here somewhere. I could have put this in Know Your Business or in collaboration even, but at the end of the day, I just think more and more, certainly in the organisation I was working for, the Australia Bank, a lot more customer focus driven by the CEO. Almost to the point where, look, I don't care what your role is, if you're aware of a customer need and you've got the ability to influence, just drop what you're doing and focus on that customer. It's almost like the Bunnings model of, you know, you walk into a Bunnings store and it doesn't matter what you need. Anyone with a badge, you can go and speak to them for some help and they're fair game and they'll help you. It's a bit of that's happening within financial services, and it's almost, you know, who's got accountability for the customer? Yeah, you know, is it, well, no, I'm back office. No, look, everyone's accountable for the customer. And, you know, really I don't mind that. You know, I don't mind that as a capability that, you know, financial services people need to start to realise, you know, if their customer is increasingly going to be their purpose and their role is primarily about servicing the customer. If you're not frontline, you know, work with your manager to work out where the links are so you can see how you influence the customer. So many events, particularly conduct-related events, but, you know, also shareholder events, fundamentally come down to not understanding the promise to the customer. So that's a really important capability and is fundamentally about taking accountability for the customer and their promises. So, own your role. This is everybody. Own your role. Easy to say, nice little slogan, but it always starts with role clarity. You know, what is my role? And this is where I find when I'm talking to organisations about these concepts, this is the anchor. This is the segue to a conversation around what are my risks? Okay, so if I own my role, okay, there's things that could go wrong in my role. What are those things? Okay, let's have a talk about managing risk. You know, let's talk about what's your personal risk register. And I like to think about every single person in the organisation has accountability for at least one or two risks. You know, everyone's got OH&S, right? Making sure there's a safe workplace. But some people have more than those. And really, at the end of the day, everybody should be having a conversation where they understand what their risks are. They understand the basics of what is a control. How can I reduce those risks? How do I know when I may be operating outside my delegated authority? And that's the final point, respect the limits. This is the whole idea of the risk appetite coming down through the organisation, and the key point for even the most junior person in your organisation who may not be privy to this, this risk appetite statement, which, to be honest, in the CPS 220 organisations I've been in, aren't the easiest read for a junior member in an organisation, even a redacted risk appetite statement. I know some organisations sort of put out the flyer, which is fine, around what this means for you. But ultimately, this is where I think there are some quantifiable risk appetite limits that people in financial services will follow. There's certainly some zero tolerance risk appetite pieces around, okay, we're not going to have any compliance breaches in this organisation. Okay, that's fine. They're easy to articulate. We're not going to have any injuries. I get that. Okay, well, let's work towards that. The bit I quite like talking about is the gut feel that somebody in financial services has who's quite junior and thinks something doesn't feel right to me. I don't know what it is. It just something doesn't feel right. Now, I actually call that the kind of gut feel of the risk appetite, right? What a person's actually doing there, it should be encouraged, is within this framework, they're actually saying, I might be outside my risk appetite right now. It doesn't feel right. These numbers aren't adding up. I can't reconcile these bank accounts. There's something going on. And I quite like the idea of encouraging people in the context of risk appetite around, if it doesn't smell right, have a conversation and have it quick. And you'd have to make apologies about that. So I like the doesn't smell right is a really fertile ground for teaching people about risk management, because there's a lot of proactive risk management that can come from somebody who knows their business just thinking that something doesn't smell right. So then you go to your line manager and you start to have those conversations, and this is all part of taking accountability. The opposite is when somebody thinks something doesn't smell right, but I'm not going to raise it. It's just people are busy. I've had this before. I've looked a bit silly. This is the culture that we don't want. So again, when I talk to these capabilities, I don't talk about culture a lot, because culture is one of those words that can mean things to different people. And I like to just bring this down to the pointy edge of, here are capabilities that you guys need. So respect the limits. These are all skills that need to be trained, I believe. Okay, leadership with integrity. So I'll say a couple of things about this. Leadership, again, means different things to different people. But for me, what does leadership mean to me in a way that I can articulate this to the most junior person in the organisation, who I believe has a leadership responsibility? The way I articulate it is, look, you might be a really smart person who really knows the business really well, and that's your key skill, right? You're just really great in terms of your knowledge of this business. You might be a little bit weak in then actually taking that knowledge and working with other people, collaborating with different people to actually make sense of your knowledge and solve some problems. You also might be a little bit weak in making decisions. You love to think through things in the back office, but when it comes to actually needing to make a decision decisively, you need to develop in that area. Well, what for me leadership is about having the skills across all those three domains. So you're really strong head knowledge. I think this is a good thing for the actuarial profession. I think we've all been trained to be really competent in connecting those pieces of complexity and understanding the business. And what I say to the actuarial students that I talk to about ERM is, if you want to be effective at this stuff, you've also got to move into the heart of the collaboration space, bringing everyone along, and also the accountability space, being able to make a decision quite often without all the facts. So that's leadership, right? Head, heart and guts. Again, the good news is that you can actually train people. You can sit down with them and work out, well, where's your strength, right? And then you can talk about things they can do to start being competent. And quite often the training is only going to come to life through application. So that's a challenge. How can we get people leading with head, heart and guts? And then, as I said up front, you just have to talk about integrity. within the context of capabilities to manage risk. Integrity for me isn't an easy, it's not an easy area. So it's easy to say I'll do the right thing. Certainly the National Australia Bank has that as one of their espoused values, which I think is fantastic, but I've encountered in my career plenty of grey areas where you're between a rock and a hard place, and just, you know, you can just see losers from either of these directions. You've got to move, and there's plenty of grey areas in the question of integrity. What I like to do with people in financial services, certainly the people who used to report to me, it starts with just having a conversation. When you see those grey areas, you don't hide it. Let's actually bring it out in the open and have a conversation around what's the best way to move forward. There's always safety in numbers. There's always safety in line two review and challenge as well when it comes to issues of integrity. But clearly, the community's expectation is that this is maybe an area that the financial services industry hasn't been doing a great job of handling. Again, I think it can be taught, and I think there's a discussion that can be had. Certainly, I'm a member of the BFO, the Banking and Finance Oath, for no other reason than I didn't think it was going to be a silver bullet to suddenly make me, give me integrity, but it at least gives me somewhere to have a conversation around what do I need to do to manage some of the grey areas I might encounter. So I won't go through every single one of these bullet points. Really, leadership and integrity, I'd sum it up as head, heart and guts. You'll get leaders who excel at one of these areas. Head leaders, heart leaders, gut leaders. And then you get the complete leader who won't necessarily excel at all those areas, but they will be proficient at operating across both head, heart and guts. And they'll also know what their strength is and how to complement that by bringing other people into the decision-making process who might be fantastic at, if they're really strong at knowing the business, they'll bring in people who can collaborate and people who are great at taking accountability. But I think ultimately your board members and your executives, why are they in those positions? Only because they've learnt to excel at operating across all of those domains. And that's how I distinguish a leader who's the most junior person in the organisation versus a leader who's on the board or a CEO. The CEO, through experience, has learned to excel across all these domains. That's leadership. That's leadership to me. We'll have questions later and you can challenge me. Are there different frameworks to look at? Because I know there's plenty of different frameworks there. So let's have a look at strengthening risk culture. I'm going to start wrapping this up in the next 5 to 10 minutes and then we'll open up for questions. So that's all great. I've been through a framework now, which I've developed, around four key capabilities. There's some capabilities within that. The capabilities of knowing the business, collaborate and taking accountability are on a foundation of leading with integrity. And this is a way that when I get the most junior person in the organisation saying to me, I'm hearing, risk culture is really important, I'm reading about it in the papers, what can I do to make a contribution to a strong risk culture? I'm talking to some university students in the next little while. And what I want to talk to them about is, look, you're at university, you're learning a lot about financial services organisations. But you'll get a job one day and you need to know what you need to do to contribute to a strong risk culture, because that's the main game for people who work in financial services businesses now. So this is the framework. But the key thing I think we need to just reflect on, well, that's all great. How, if you're on the board or a leadership team or an executives, what can I do, right, to roll this out? And I want to give some perspectives on that. So, okay, culture's strong when effective professionals thrive. Here's the things. Effective professionalism is measured and rewarded. So this is your link to incentives. Okay, your incentives actually have to link back to rewarding those people who exhibit the capabilities that you want to see. Okay. The bit about measurement, I don't have answers for you today, I'm sorry. I did go to the risk culture webinar that I think it's Farmy from APRA came in. Great session, really great session. He challenged the actual profession. You know, you guys are good at measuring things. Can you come up with some way of measuring it? But the thing I would say about measuring it, if risk culture is all about people, I think you have to start by talking to people. That's an obvious statement in the world. But I do think there has been a little bit of a tendency for consulting firms to come in and start talking to the board and talking to executives to get a sense of risk culture when, yes, they are important, but you've actually, at the end of the day, need to talk to the rank and file and even the people in the most junior parts of the organisation. I've already suggested one question. You know, do you understand the risks that you are responsible for? If you get a lot of people saying, no, I don't even know what risks, you know, you've got a real problem with risk culture. If you get a high hit rate on that question, you're doing well. Leadership tone from the top, it has to be in there, no doubt. But why? The context within this framework, I think really the only reason you need leadership tone from the top is these should be your best practice individuals in the organisation who are effective professionals. You know, they are the leaders who actually have learnt all of these capabilities and do them really well. Okay, here's the flip side. If your board members or your executive don't show these capabilities, then maybe they need to be they need to be replaced. So the leadership tone from the top isn't, you know, it's because that should be your centre of excellence in the capabilities you need to manage risk effectively. Purpose, plan and values. Early on in my actuarial career, I guess you sort of, the purpose and the plan, yeah, that's for the strategy people to sort of put out and I'll get on with my business. Well, the longer I've gone on in my career, the more important I've realised the work the CEO and the board and the executive does on your purpose, yeah, and your values and your strategic plan, how important this is. But it's only useful to the extent it really resonates with people. And the sort of people you want it to resonate with is the effective professionals in the industry that you want to attract into your business and the effective professionals who you want to attract into your organisation. So I won't go into what such a plan or what such values would look like today, but that's what you need to do to get that risk culture really working. Systems and processes, certainly in the NAB where I still work, and the people surveys we used to have out there, the most common complaint was we don't feel supported by our systems and processes to do our job. That improved over the years, certainly when I was in the NAB, because the NAB did a lot of investment on that. But a lot of people find it frustrating when they're not supported by their systems and their processes. And so where that manifests is it then means that people don't know their business like they should. Like knowledge management systems are poor. They don't know their processes because they're not mapped. They're not collaborating because they're not supported by some systems. So there's some work you can actually do in the infrastructure to support people, right? Systems and processes. They need to allow people to do their jobs. The last two, there's obviously the HR component. Effective professionals need to be hired, right? So you need to work with your HR department to make sure you're screening people before they come in to get the best of these capabilities. If you get an opportunity to move people on who just can't show these capabilities you need, more so at senior roles. At more junior roles, you can develop them, but when they're in more senior roles, it's very damaging to have people who are leaders and role models who aren't showing these capabilities. They need to be managed out. Finally, in some ways, this is the big one. You know, when people say to me, well, look, it's just in a nutshell, how do you really get ERM really happening within an organisation? I always say start with the board, but then I say train your people. You know, if you did nothing else, just really get all your people aside and make sure that they get risk management, even just the basics. You know, they can walk away from a training session saying, well, okay, I now know I'm responsible for risk, I'm accountable, and I've got a fair idea of what those risks are. You know, I'll go from there. So training is actually really important, and development, are very, very important. So there we are. I'm going to wrap up now. That's my little run through conclusion. Risk culture is all about people, and it is most effectively described as such. So I think we can start a conversation using the term risk culture, but very quickly we should start to talk about people, because that's what it's all about. An effective ERM framework will have the actions and behaviours of its people at its centre. The community is increasingly demanding this. And in terms of the what's to think differently about ERM, and what I'd like to say today is if ERM's been about a multi-dimensional framework where we go through each component piece by piece, I think people need to somehow be moved right into the centre of that framework, and we need to start thinking about the framework falls over if people collapses. And the framework only exists to support people. So whether that's moving ERM now more into the HR people, I don't know, maybe it is. But ERM to me is all about people and needs to be managed as such. So the third point, an organisation must agree the professional characteristics or capabilities that people need to demonstrate to effectively manage risk. Only then can they develop initiatives to strengthen risk culture, and the law says a board needs to have a strategy to improve risk culture. I will say now that they can only do that if they have a vision or a sense for what risk culture looks like in terms of their people. They have to do that work. You know, when they've got those capabilities they want their people to have, then you can start to implement strategies to get towards that. If you don't have that sense of what success looks like, all those strategies seem to just spin wheels. And then, yeah, just a little comment for the Actuaries Institute. They play a critical role in helping develop effective professionals able to contribute to a strong risk culture for the financial services organisations and communities they serve. So the Actuaries Institute is doing its education review. I have always seen Actuaries Institute excelling at the know the business and the kind of, you know, the head leadership part, thought leaders, no doubt. I will now say that for actuaries to be effective professionals as they come out of their training into these organisations, they need to become strong in the collaboration space, strong in the knowing how to get things done and take accountability, and strong in leadership as well. So certainly that's been the lens I've been looking at the education review through recently to make sure those things are ticked off, and you know, certainly work done through the professionalism course is sensational. Could be a little bit more on collaboration, I believe, for in our actuarial training. You know, does that mean the actuaries have to part of their training? Why don't you go and spend some time with a bunch of accountants and lawyers and strategists and use your knowledge to develop that way, which has certainly been the story of my career. You know, I think I started my career in an actuarial role and found myself working with a lot of actuaries. Certainly the latter part of my career, I rarely worked with actuaries. Particularly when I started to move into banking. More recently, moved into superannuation because I miss them. You know, I liked working with actuaries. That's it. So that's it from me. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and let's have a discussion around people and risk culture.
Thank you, Tim. Like the diagrams and the provocative description of the three elements using the jargon of head, heart and guts. Some time for questions, comments. You know the routine by now. Use the microphone, please. Name and organisation. And Ashley, welcome.
Thanks, Tim. Ashley Palmer from Mount Hewitt. Really enjoyed the presentation. I really actually quite like head, heart and guts. That reminds me of a meat pie I was having at the football on Saturday. I guess where I think this gets interesting, and I totally agree with you, your point where it's a people issue, and I guess the role that HR can play, particularly as the people in organisations who are directors of culture on their title, so yeah. Maybe there's a little bit more for them to do. I think it's really interesting self-reflection as well around how appraisals will work in the future. I mean, for many organisations in the past, that's been a one-year event, so a lot can happen in a year that you forget about. I tend to think in the future we'll be appraising each other like 360s nearly on every piece of work that we do, and maybe that'll change, I guess, it'll give people quicker feedback about how they're performing and really how they link to the collaboration areas you were talking. How do you think customer outcomes works? Because I tend to think I get what you mean, but it's quite hard to do, isn't it, to sense where does the back office sit in a financial product that might only generate an outcome in 20 years' time, kind of thing.
Yeah. So how do customer outcomes work?
In this.
Yeah. I actually don't know the answer to that question, actually. But what I would say is the customer needs to be a stakeholder that's in every single business decision, obviously. And that stakeholder, whoever wants to wear the hat of the customer, if not the customer themselves, that stakeholder needs to bring in the latest feedback from the customer, and there's a variety of tools, Net Promoter Score is one that's been used, that can start to give you a pretty good sense of where the customer's thinking. And obviously the regulator and other interest groups and the media also represent the customer as well, so there's lots of facts that can be brought in to the table there. For long dated contracts, I appreciate there's a lot of customers who will not say anything for many, many years. You just don't get a strong sense.
Do you think it would be better if we're just talking about culture than risk culture, because it tends to silo it more in a risk function where we're looking at numbers more than people aspects?
Well, as I said, when I sort of hit the road with this, and I'm not doing much of a tour, but I very quickly move on from risk culture to just talk about being an effective professional. Yeah. Right? And I think that covers both elements. If you do all those things I've just been through really well, you're not just going to instill a great risk culture. It's going to be a great performance culture and lead to good things through the organisation. But what I think the community is saying is, first and foremost, you need to address your conduct. And for me, that's about being a good risk manager. If everyone's good at risk management in the organisation, I think you're going to go a way to address community expectations.
Thanks, Tim.
That was the 5-minute bell, so we've still got time for one or two more. Greg?
Greg Martin, I was just going to follow up from that comment and say, I think we should stop talking about risk culture and just talk about culture. You embed risk culture in your culture. You don't have it as a separate thing. Because if I was sitting here and a bunch of compliance people, we'd be talking about compliance culture.
Yeah.
And if I came here with a bunch of IT people, we'd be talking about cyber, something or other, and whatever, culture. And you go, actually, you want that stuff. And in fact, your little picture, which had client in the middle, that's your business model. That's not a risk model. I have a little saying: happy client or happy customer, happy Clearview, where I work. Because if you don't have customers, you can't charge them, you don't make money. So it all hangs together. And I think that, to my mind, is what we've done at our place. We have culture, and the key elements of we don't put our customers' money at unreasonable risk or inappropriate risk and stuff like that is core in the culture. It's not a separate little thing over here called risk culture.
Yeah.
And I thought all your stuff... I totally agree with all your stuff on management. I just thought that was core management. The only other comment I was going to make is boards. I think we put too much emphasis on boards. The people that walk around, people like me, I'm the chief actuary risk officer. What happens in the business is what I do. The board, I'm having an argument with them in a closed room that they don't actually... called corporate governance doesn't even have those people in your business. They're not supposed to be there. But anyway...
That's good.
Tim, you want to respond to that in terms of...
I know we've got one person from APRA in the room, so we don't want to talk about risk culture anymore. We'll just start talking about culture. Okay, thank you for that. Anything else?
Any last message, Tim?
No more message.
So thank you very much for joining us. Please join me in thanking Tim.